Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IDFC First Bank's Q3 FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Saptarshi Bapari, Head Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Darwin. Hello everyone, welcome to the call, and thanks for joining the call. Today we have Mr. V. Vaidyanathan, MD and CEO of our bank, and Sudhanshu Jain, CFO and Head of Corporate Center for our bank. We'll start the session with opening remarks from Vaidya, followed by the brief on financials from Sudhanshu, and post that we'll open the session for Q&A. So right now I will hand over the call to Vaidya for his opening remarks.
Hello everyone, good evening everybody, very happy to speak to all of you. Sudhanshu, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, good evening everyone, Sudhanshu here.
The way we're doing this is that Sudhanshu will first take you through the numbers, and I'll come in a little later with my perspective. V. Vaidyanathan here, and Sudhanshu, why don't you take over?
Yeah, thanks Vaidya. I'll keep it brief. I'll touch upon the key financial numbers for the quarter as of 31st December 2024. If you see the balance sheet size, that has now expanded and reached about 3.3 lakh crores. That was an expansion of about 24% on a YoY basis. If I go into the components of balance sheet, both the advances and deposits continue to grow at a faster pace. The deposit traction continues to be very much there. In fact, our customer deposits have increased by 29% on a YoY basis, and it is now at about 2.27 lakh crores. Within this, the growth in retail deposits is at 30% on a YoY basis. If I move on to CASA deposit, that has also increased by 32% on a YoY basis. In fact, on an average basis, CASA deposits have grown by 35% on a YoY basis. CASA ratio, while it has come off from 48.9% to 47.7% in the current quarter, but I would say that this has remained quite stable over a period of time. Term deposits, it grew at 26% on a YoY basis. Here again, the retail term deposits grew at a faster pace at 30%. During the quarter, our branch network expanded to 971 branches. We have opened 10 branches during the quarter, which takes the tally for the year to about 27 branches. Moving quickly to the high-cost legacy borrowing, which has been giving us a drag because this is at 8.8%. Happy to report that we have retired another 1,000-odd crores during Q3. The book, which is of this high cost, is now at about 6,700 crores. We have given details in the presentation on slide 23, where you would find that about 1,850 crores will further mature in Q4, and bulk of it will retire into the next year. Moving on to the credit deposit ratio, which I think nowadays is an important parameter. Again, here we continue to do well as deposits are growing faster than advances. The credit deposit ratio at December quarter is now down to 95.7%. This is roughly 200 basis points improvement from the previous quarter. If you look at the incremental credit deposit ratio during the last one year, then we are coming at 76.5%. Moving on to the cost of funds, which is connected to the deposits and borrowings, the cost of funds for the quarter was at 6.49%. We saw a marginal increase of 3 basis points during the quarter due to the tight liquidity environment, which is sort of prevailing. But if we look at the deposit cost, that has been quite stable at 6.38%. The same was the number, I would say, in the last two quarters as well. So net-net, both of this, I think, has been quite stable all around. If I move on to the asset side of the picture, the overall funded assets registered a strong growth of 22% on a YoY basis to reach 2.31 lakh crores. Sequentially, the growth was 3.8%. The growth was largely driven in this quarter and even on a YoY, largely by mortgage as a business, then from the vehicle segment, largely in two-wheelers, where we have a strong foothold. The business banking segment, which is essentially working capital backed by FDs and property as a collateral. Wholesale business, you would have seen that we have registered a strong growth in the last two quarters, and also by certain products which are coming from a small base like gold loan and credit card. We have given a detailed product-wise cut in the investor presentation. The credit card base now stands at 3.3 million cards. The book size is about rupees 6918 crores, and this has grown at 40% on a YOY basis. The gross spends on credit cards increased by 45% on a YOY basis in the 9 months. If I talk about asset quality, then the gross NPA of the bank was at 1.94% at 31st December, and the net NPA was at 0.52%. If we exclude the microfinance book, then the GNPA in fact stood at 1.81% and improved by 7 basis points on a sequential basis. The PCR on the NPA we hold is at 73.6%. If I give some further details in terms of the GNPA in retail, rural and MSME segment, then that stood at 1.63% and the net NPA stood at 0.59%. Again, the increase here sequentially was more because of MFI. The rest, if you exclude MFI, then the numbers would have slightly come off. The overall standard restructured book continues to come down, and this is further reduced to 0.2% of the funded assets. And we hold sufficient cover here. The 97% of the book is secured in nature, and we hold about 18% provision on the same. On the SMA front, the SMA 1 and SMA 2 book, excluding GLG, that improved by about 3 basis points to 0.82% in this quarter. This was 0.85 in the previous quarter. We saw, however, an increase in SMA 1 and 2 of MFI book, where it increased from 2.54% to 4.56%. If we talk about now the gross slippages for quarter 3, then this was at rupees 2192 crores. And in the last quarter, this was at 2031 crores, right? So the delta increase is about 160 crores. And I would say that about 140 crores of this has come from MFI alone. Even on the net slippage plan, the net slippages for the quarter was at 1541 crores vis-a-vis 1392 crores of the previous quarter. The delta increase of 149 crores is largely attributable to MFI. The recoveries and upgrades for the quarter was around 651 crores and pretty much the same as the last quarter. Last quarter it was about 638 crores. If I move on to profitability, then I will start with NI. The NI for the quarter increased by 14% on a YOY basis to rupees 4,902 crores. The net interest margin on AUM for the quarter was at 6.04%. This, however, contracted by about 14 basis points sequentially. I would attribute this reduction largely to the reduction in the MFI book. The impact was about 6 odd basis points on that count. And also because we have started scaling the wholesale book in the last few months. So the average book increased and about 5 bits of impact came because of that. And rest 2 to 3 bits I would attribute to the increase in the cost of fund, which I sort of elucidated earlier. Moving on to the fee and other income, that increased by 20% in Q2 to rupees 1,757 crores. Sorry, my bad, in Q3. And this was largely retail-led, which is at 92% of the total fee. Moving on to operating expenses, this grew at a reduced pace of 16% on a YOY basis. And for the full year, this increase in OPEX is about 18%. Again, in this quarter, because there was a heightened activity, increased disbursements because of festive and so on, operating expenses sequentially in value terms have grown. But we saw some of that impact even into the fee line item. The core operating profit, which is NI plus fees excluding trading gains, this grew by 15% on a YOY basis to rupees 1,736 crores. Moving on to provisions, provisions for the quarter stood at 1,338 crores as compared to rupees 1,732 crores. During the quarter, the bank has not utilized any contingent provision. If you remember that we had created contingent provision of about 315 crores against microfinance portfolio in the previous quarter, but we have not done any utilization during the current quarter. The credit cost for the bank for this quarter stood at about 2.3%. If we exclude the provisions on the MFI book, then the credit cost is at 1.8%, and this was pretty much the same number in the last quarter if we exclude MFI and one toll account. So the provisions have not sequentially increased but have been broadly stable, is the point which I want to make. The profit after tax for the quarter is at rupees 313 crores compared to rupees 201 crores in Q2 of the previous quarter. Of course, on a YOY basis, this has come off because of the decline which we have observed in the MFI book, which led to impact on the top line, as well as increase in provisions in the MFI, as well as some normalization of credit costs, which have sort of come in through the year. Moving on to the last section, which is capital adequacy. The bank has maintained strong capital adequacy, and including profits for 9M, the capital adequacy was at 16.11%, with CET1 ratio being at 13.68%. This also factors in an increase which came on account of merger, in terms of a positive impact, that benefit was about 25 basis points. The liquidity also, we continue to maintain healthy liquidity levels. The LCR was stable at about 114% as of December 31st. With this, I am broadly done with the numbers, key numbers, which I wanted to touch upon. Maybe I'll ask Vaidya to sort of give his remarks for the quarter.
Good evening, everybody. So just want to share with you the brief approach and strategy we've been following on dealing with the current situation. So number one, if you notice why the cost income ratio of the bank is high. So we called out the reason already to many of you that this is a new bank. This is 6 years old. I know many of you have heard this before and know the number, know the facts also, but it is a fact. We are losing close to about 2,000 crores a year in setting up the branch architecture of this bank. Basically, the branches, the ATMs, the people, the technology stack had to be completely built up from scratch. The teams had to be hired, you know, all that stuff. So all that is consuming. So if you see the, if you see the core profit of the bank, as and when this 2,000 crore winds itself down to zero, you should be in position to, you should be able to estimate that this is something that you can add back when you estimate the bank. Now, on this front, I must say that we have made one new disclosure this time. If you see page 66 of the presentation, we have actually shown how much the liability business has been losing as a percentage of the average deposits and average retail deposits. And this number in FY20, when we started the bank, meaning the bank started in 2016, but really until 2 years, it was still very much a startup stage. Our deposits were only 10,000 crores in retail. So think about it like practically startup. So in FY20, our loss, what is loss in liabilities? Let me just tell you 1 second, but then I'll come back to the point. So loss in liabilities is what we, the income, the liabilities team makes, net of what it pays to the customers and any fee income that it generates. So that's what is really the net loss. So that number was 4.2% of the average retail deposits of 23,000 crores. In FY21, this came down to 3%. In FY22, this came down to 2.1%. In FY23, the loss went down to 1.8%. FY24, it came down to 1.7%. In 9 months of this year, it came down to 1.3%. So you should believe me when I'm telling you that when the branches are scaling up, then they are becoming profitable. It's just, of course, it is easy to understand. It's common sense. But, you know, when we put the numbers to it, hopefully you will be able to realize that if 4.2% has continuously come down to 1.3%, it's 5 years. I must remind you, it's 5 years. Unlike other banks being 30 years, it is taking its time. Now, we believe that this 1.3% will wind itself down to zero, certainly by 2030 or 2029. So the direction is clearly there. And this is why you should, when you model our bank, just don't go by the final numbers reported by us. Please factor for this fact that this 2,000 crores that we're losing today or 1.3% of the deposits that we are losing today will wind itself down to zero. The second item which is important to know as far as, talking of cost to income, let me just share with you that the cost to income on the liability side, staying with liabilities, in FY22 was 227%. In FY23 was 182%. FY24 was 197%. In 9 months of FY25, it has come down to 178%. So our guide is that we are seeing this clearly going. I hope none of you are doubting our ability to raise deposits really coming well. So this number coming downwards to 100%, which means it will not lose any money, 100% by FY 2029 or 2029-ish or 2030-ish, if you want to even stretch itself by a year, in that zone. So this direction is very clear, and I request you to please factor this in when you consider our bank vis-à-vis, when you compare our bank with any others who've been around for a long time. Now, let me move to the next item when we talk of cost to income. In the cost to income on the credit card side, we are currently running, in FY 2022, we were 240%. 2023, we came down to 165%. 2024, we came down, rapid movement came down to 116%. And in 9 months, FY 2025, already come down to 100%. Already done. Meaning like that there is cost income ratio of credit card down to 100%. And we believe that by the time we head towards the 29-ish or so, we should come down to about 60%. That's the way the book is growing. So, and then, we have also provided a particular slide, page 67, where we have also shown the loss in credit cards as a percentage of the average credit card outstanding. So in FY 2022, it was 27%, 2023 is 12%, 2024 is 3.78%, and 9 months has already come down to -0.11. So by giving out this very specific disclosure about how much which business is losing and when and what's the trend line over 5 years, and therefore it should hopefully give you a really good picture that these numbers are truly moving in the right direction. Now, you might then say that, listen, why would you need to launch credit cards? That would be a pretty fair question. You'd say, listen, you guys, listen, you guys are not even making money. Your ROE is low. So why launch so many businesses? Now, I must say that the way to think about this, and I must very clearly tell you the way we have thought about it, and I have personally, I stand by it because I am personally the, I'm definitely architecting this broad thinking, and I stand by it. I must tell you that the way this works is as follows. We are building a liability base. Now, in the liability business we're building, now we have close to 2 lakh crores. Now, I must explain to you that if we don't launch the credit card business, can you imagine telling a customer that, we are going to be a big bank of the future, which we really believe we are, but listen, open savings accounts with us, have fixed deposit with us, but for credit card, go to some other bank, which you can't do, or we will distribute some other bank credit card. Well, it just cannot build a full relationship. Then the customer will have a credit card elsewhere, also keep a savings account there. Why should the customer come to our bank? So these are essential parts of building the bank. Secondly, if we had not started the credit card business in 2021, if we're not losing the 300 crores per year, which I believe is inevitable, then after becoming profitable, we'll have to come back and tell you, now we're launching credit cards. Now we're going to lose 300 crores for 5 years from here on. So we believe to do it all one shot, to build a complete, comprehensive, integrated franchise is a very important part of building a proper, universal bank, which has to have a long-term future. Because once we start generating 16, 17, 18 return on equity, we don't want to turn the clock back and say we're investing in new businesses. Let me give you one more example. Let's talk of wealth management. We get customers over for the liability business, and because of our service levels, technology, app, etc., really customers are coming in, and our products are very good, our culture is good. So, I mean, our wealth management business is going like busters. It is growing by 50%-60% per year. It's already touching something like 40,000 crores. If you, both the AUM as well as the deposits of those customers with our bank. Now, can you imagine telling a customer, bringing them for liabilities, and telling them that for wealth management, you go to some other wealth specialist bank or go to any peer bank? It just won't work. Why would the customer only leave savings with us and do wealth management elsewhere? So I must share with you to build the kind of, we have a vision of building a really amazing bank for the future. So there is not a choice for the bank to say that wealth management, we will postpone for another day. We just had to do it. And so you've got to build the team, the technology, the systems, the culture, the people, the leadership. Everybody has to be hired, and they need to work well together. Now, let me give you cash management. That's the other business we're investing. So right now, we have current account balances of close to about 4,000 odd crores, which is a really fantastic piece that is now coming along. Now, in the cash management business, again, let me just say that we lend to a lot of customers on the lending side, on corporate banking also. As you know, we've been growing corporate banking quite strongly now, by close to like maybe 20-odd%. Now, and let me tell you that it's been 5-6 years have gone by, not a single, not one new NPA has been created in the bank in corporate banking. And we are really very happy and proud about that. And we have a good credit committee and, you know, with the board and everybody, and we are proud about how we're running that. But coming back to the point. So when we do current, you know, credit, you know, corporate banking, and we do that, we give loan to people, really can we say, tell people that, okay, listen, you take money from me, but it'd be pretty foolish to tell the customer to go and say, now you can do cash management somewhere else. It's not possible. I mean, it's possible, but it'll be pretty, you know, it'll be not very, very smart. It won't be adding much value to us. So we said we need to do cash management. When you do cash management, we need to hire the team, build the people, build the, you know, the coverage team, the product team, the technology team, the builds, go and find customers. You've got to do all that. And I genuinely believe there is no choice but to do it. We got to build a future, a bank of the future. So I gave you just three examples. I have many more, like close to about 15 or 20 products. We believe that we're building a good long-term bank with all these features. So whatever the pain, whatever the hit, whatever the negative, we are taking it today. So, but when we come out of, you know, of this whole thing and we come through with this, I'm very proud, but by that time we'll not have to look back and invest all over again. So my objective of this in opening part of the conversation was to tell you we are building the bank like this. I gave you three examples, there are many more, where we are building a complete integrated bank. Now, what is the unifying factor between all these businesses we are launching? There are maybe a couple of them. So one is that they've got to meet a specific need, like a cash management meets a need, or a FASTag meets a need, or wealth management, or cards, or whatever. Now, the thing is that apart, what is connecting them all? They're all connected by one theme, that they're all phenomenally technology-enabled. If any of you tried a cash management services, if any of you tried a credit card business or tried our even app, you'll find all of them are really connected through technology and in a very, very advanced technology. Then the other thing they're all connected with is that they're all very good in customer experience. Like, we are just going crazy about the concept of customers getting superior experience at this bank. Now, so when you have good service, good technology, good culture, then every product that's coming out is a winner. Let me tell you, cash management has been around for 4 or 5 years, already 4,000 crores of current account in the bank. No chance on earth our bank would have got current account of this scale if we had not launched that business. So this is my short point of just sharing with you how we are thinking of building this. Now, you might then say that listen, why there you know, first 2 years, you know, between 19, 20, 20, 21, you might say that, listen, at that point of time, you had legacy bad loans and you said you were writing it off or charging it off or you're collecting. Then this next situation came that your, you know, then COVID came, fine, that happened to everybody. Then for 2 years we had peace, meaning like 20, 24, 23 and 24, PAT looked up, direction was good, everything was good, life was looking great. Now suddenly you've come up with the MFI problem. And now how long MFI will last? Why did we do MFI? So let me therefore very specifically address what we think about the fact now have you set you up with a new problem. And let me just address that, you know, as honestly as I can. Let me tell you the first part of the situation that we faced in, let me say, 19 was honestly unavoidable. Whether you had me in this job or anybody else, nobody could have avoided taking a charge off for Z1 or Reliance Capital or, you know, the entry point, Mumbai entry point, those account that we had 1,100 crores. No, just nobody. It was just there. Any management had to account for it. So, and I took it. Now, then our operating profit is very low. So we have moved ahead and gradually built the operating profit. In fact, I wouldn't say gradually, quite strongly, I would say. Our operating profit has now touched 2.3%. It's very tough to build operating profit. It's, in fact, easier to charge off credit cost, but harder to build operating profit. So we built it from literally 0.3-0.4% now. So that thing is built. Now let me tell you this issue about what you might think that we've set you up with a new problem. And to just say that, look, this is a bank, early stage, it just goes through its, you know, you get one jab at the face on one front, then you fix it, then you fix the next one. But the core is coming strong. So let me just tell you where let me specifically address the issue of MFI, because we owe you a genuine and straightforward answer on why we did MFI business And then what is the plan, how much is the hit, and where is it going? So the MFI business has, one of the key reasons why we do the MFI business is that it meets our PSL requirements. Let me give a simple reason. As a bank, we are required to meet the following. We are required to meet 40% PSL. Out of that, we are supposed to meet 18% agriculture PSL. Then small and marginal farmer, you need to meet 10%. Not your micro enterprises are supposed to meet 7.5%. And loan to weaker section of the Indian population, you need to meet 12%. Now, IDFC was into infrastructure. They were not doing any of these. Capital First did a bit of these, but really this. Not bit, I mean a little bit of this, but still is doing something of it. In fact, IDFC hasn't had started some of the businesses to meet the requirement, but really it was because scratch on the ground. So, therefore, now how a bank, early stage bank, meets a loan to weaker section, 12%. How does a bank meet, you know, small and marginal power farmer, 10%? So the microfinance business was an amazing silver bullet which met three requirements. One, it made money. We were lending at 22, 23, 24%. We had some additional fees on top of it. Our cost of funds was really nothing, like 6 or 7%, and it just made a lot of money. Number two, it also met the requirement of small and marginal farmer, 10%. It met the requirement of loan to weaker section, 12%. So it was an amazing product. Now therefore, this issue that has come to us in the MFI front is not an IDFC issue alone. It's come to everybody. So it's come to everybody. Just let us say a bit of a collateral damage that has happened by a mishap, so to say, on a highway. I'm really happy to tell you, and we'll discuss, as during the Q&A, we'll discuss specific numbers, that except MFI, our bank has close to about 25 products. We are on record in telling you that all of them are performing well. And they've not been performing well today. They've been performing well for 15 years now. I mean, the ones which have been alive for that long. Some have been launched later than that. So think about it, that for 15 years our home loan has not troubled us. Our loan against property has not troubled us. Our used car has been behaving perfectly well. Our personal loans is doing perfectly well. Our credit card is doing perfectly well. In fact, much better. We put some numbers of our bank with the industry. Our micro enterprises business, which do kirana shops, salons, etc., finance, is doing perfectly well. So every single business of ours is doing well. So is one item has got stuck somewhere in the center. Now, how do we deal with this? So we have a provisioning policy whereby in MFI, we charge off 75% at 90 DPD and 120 DPD, we are charging off, or 123 DPD, we are charging off 100%. So our methodology in all products, including this product, is to be really upfront about everything. So because, and really, you know, 90 DPD, 75 is very stiff. So when the MFI book is having problem, it is hitting us first. But when the MFI business will recover, we'll recover fastest. That's how it works. Now, because of the same logic, now our credit cost in MFI business for these, you know, for these 9 months is close to about 8%. And we have not reversed the SMA 1, SMA 2 provision we took last quarter. We still have it in the buffer. So that's the last point. Now on MFI, one closing comment I want to tell you is that now we're slowing down the book. Now it's not only that it's hitting us in credit cost, it is also income is also coming down, because I told you it is amazingly, you know, profitable product. So to that extent, income is coming down. It's a bit of a double whammy, I should say, because suddenly now we also have credit cost coming, you have no income coming from that line because book is coming down. So this is a real issue. Now how do we look ahead? Now when we look ahead, let me just say that we have two very simple approaches of dealing with this, because really it's quite uncomplicated. What is it? One is that on the cost front, we are very clear that our cost growth of the next year will come down. We have given a breakup of this time, we put it as a new slide on what is our costs. And we have given a proper breakup of how much of our cost is IT expenses, how much is employee, how much is infra, how much is channel sourcing, how much is volume linked. We have disclosed everything. We have found something, we have not found something, we know it, but we want to share something with you. Let me tell you how the operating leverage of the bank is already beginning to come. The operating leverage of the bank coming as follows. If you notice, when you go back in time, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, our OPEX was growing by 30-odd% and income was growing by 30-32%, and you know, it was, that's the way it was. This year, our OPEX has grown, the 9 months of this year, OPEX has grown by 18.2%, but the business of the bank has grown by 25%. When I say business, I mean deposits business, that has grown by 28%, and you know, the loan book has grown by 22%. So when you add that up, you'll find it 25%. So when OPEX is growing by 18 and income is, your book is growing by 25, so you know that this bank is now beginning to build serious leverage. When you look ahead, our own estimate is that for 25-26, our OPEX will not grow more than about maybe 13% what is now growing at 18. Now, you might say, how will that happen? Because that's because a couple of things are happening here. One is the income itself will be lesser next year, and I mean income will not be lesser. I mean the growth in income will be even slower than this year because the microfinance business, you know, is gone and it has to reset itself. But the good news is that OPEX will come down next year. So now you might say that if you've been growing OPEX by 18%, how will it come down to 13? Now the bank is doing many cost cut initiatives. Some of them are, you know, individual product literally, some cashback propositions, some, you know, the licenses we're taking from various technology companies, what are the kind of credit bureau pulls we're doing, can we do it through alternative bureaus, it can become at a cheaper rate, can we do multi-bureau structures, how to rework our IT licenses, how to rework our travel, conveyance, cost, there's a major project running out here. I mean, how to have double occupancy, single occupancy, printing, stationery, whether people are sending 2 SMS to customers, can we break it up into single SMS to send it? How can we change the sourcing cost of the bank? How the credit cost is going, the credit expenses, how many people are doing credit evaluation, etc. So all the ATM cost. So there are a lot of projects that are going on, etc. So this is all one part of the work, that is cost, when serious work is going on. Then there are a large number of transformation projects that are going on. That is even beyond the normal touch about SMS, etc. It is about real transformation. For example, if you have maybe 100 CPUs in the country, how to collapse them into 3? Or how to, how to digitize a particular process where we eliminate the entire chain of work going on in the chain. So let me just say a lot of transformation work is going on, a lot of operational activity is going on. So one big area, how cost work is going on, and we believe next year it will come down to like 13-odd%. Second thing that will happen is that one information we have not provided, but hopefully we'll provide next time, is that we want to break up our OPEX and show you how much of that is fixed and how much is variable. And if book grows, what percentage of this, how much will fixed grow by, how much will variable grow by. When we do that work also, we believe next year we'll deliver about 13%. So this is a very material moment in our life. We believe next 4-5 years, since the OPEX has been incurred for the last 5 years, and the at least the essential building blocks have been built, we believe on a CAGR basis our OPEX should stabilize somewhere at the 13-ish league. And then next year our income will probably grow by, I mean, I have to hazard a guess, so please, you know, the analyst can do a little more deeper work, etc. But maybe like the 14-ish or 14.5-ish somewhere, that's how the income will grow. But the year after that, because the microfinance business would have stabilized, you know, the base case, the lower base would have been achieved. But once that is achieved in 25-26, I honestly don't see any doubt in the bank continuing to grow the bank on the loan side by, 18-20%. We already guided for 20.5%, and I see honestly no problem growing the loan book like 20+. And the deposit will grow by maybe 22-23%. And then, come 2029, whatever guidance is given, that we'll be a 5 lakh crore loan book and 6 lakh crore deposits, we don't see a risk to that. So once that comes through, then rest of the equation is very good because our, NIM is, a 6%, we make fees of 2%. If our cost income eventually, I believe, will come down to the 50s, and then, you'll have a 3.5-ish, 4-ish, operating profit, you have 1% of credit cost, you'll be operating, posting ROA of like 2-odd%. So probably a bit more than that on an even more longer basis. So our theory is very simple, that this is MFI, it's a temporary situation, it will go. I have personally seen, I've been, in business as, for a long time, and we've seen many cycles in life. The good news is that neither on the retail front or wholesale front, we have put one foot wrong on credit. MFI is our first big issue, let me say, post-merger. But we will deal with it. It is a bit of a, you know, industry accident. So this is my quick brief. I hope with that opening comment about how we plan to, how we think about the future. We are frankly very bullish. We believe that some stage our bank will turn. I'm requesting you all not to, you know, get very concerned about one quarter's result or what's going to, you know, come up in the next two, three quarters. I mean, this time will be, obviously it'll be looking upwards, but I can't promise that exactly it will be thrill you. It'll be good. But let me just say that as the 26, 27, 28, 29 comes, this is on record. You can check it out. I'm pretty confident that once the bases are met, like 25, 26, then after that, next 4-5 years, I am looking at a good story. Because there is no single business that is in 15 years has let us down. I am not expecting, you know, to have any problem in any other business when once we see the back of MFI. So thank you very much, everybody. And with that note, we are open for discussions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to please use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Gao Zishuan from Schonfeld. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for the opportunity and congratulations on the good quarter. Just on the MFI, you know, do you mind sharing with us your outlook? Because the SMA 1 plus 2 seems to have increased sequentially more than what we have seen in some peers. So do you mind sharing with us, you know, what kind of credit costs are we expecting in the next 1-2 quarters? And also on the overall credit costs, how are we thinking about FY25? Because our previous guidance is, I think, 225 basis points. And just look at 9 months, I don't know whether that still stands. That will be my first question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Maybe I'll take that. So on the MFI, we have seen an increase in the, certainly in the SMA1, the SMA2 book, even the NPA levels have gone up. As you would have noticed from the presentation, that we had an impact which was felt because of the holidays in October, essentially Diwali, coincided with Diwali. And because we have a weekly collection cycle, the last week of collections got impacted, and which also led to some flows into the subsequent months. So we have seen a pileup in the MFI book, and the challenge very much continues to be there. We are also closely monitoring the portfolio. As you would have noted that we have consciously slowed down on the disbursements. The good part is all of our incremental disbursements, what we are doing is also CGFMU insured and so on. So on this book, if I give you the 9-month number, we are already coming to credit cost of 8%. And this doesn't bake in the additional contingency provision of 315 crores, which we have, right? Which we have because the SMA book levels went up, the NPAs went up. We felt it was more prudent to hold on to the provision and not utilize at this stage. On your question on 225 basis points, as I sort of covered earlier, that excluding MFI, the rest of the book is very much coming in line, right? So we have not seen increase in SMAs, we have not seen increase in slippages. So we feel that on the rest of the MFI book, we could still hold on to this number even into the next quarter. However, the overall guidance for 225, that may slightly inch up a bit. We, of course, need to see how the situation sort of spans out in Q4. But that would be few bits of increase could be because of MFI, because we are seeing slightly higher losses sort of coming there vis-a-vis the anticipation which we had in the maybe in the previous quarter.
But our own sense is that the credit cost of MFI should peak out in Q4. So it should be even more than this quarter. But when we estimate the credit cost based on the collection percentages, assuming credit collection percentages continue to stay what it was in December, and maybe probably even improve from here, but we expect that Q4 to increase, and then Q1 26 to be less than the prior quarter, Q2 to be less than Q1, Q3 to be less than Q2, and Q4 to be less than Q1. So basically, this is the peak of it. Our estimates are, you know, that the quarter that's ongoing right now is the peak of it.
Thank you. And my second question is on the 14% revenue growth estimate for FY26. Do you mind sharing with us what's the breakup in terms of, you know, the loan growth that we are likely to do and also the margin outlook? But it seems like the strategy for now seems to have changed to grow more corporates in the last 1-2 quarters. So how should we think about margins and loan growth?
So the basically this year, next year, we believe loan book will continue to grow by about 20-odd%. And deposit will probably grow by maybe 24-ish, 25-ish percent next year. The reason why the income will not grow directly in proportion is that the microfinance, like I said, is a highly profitable business. We're lending at 24%. You know, incidentally, though the microfinance book is only maybe 6%, 7% of the book, maybe until a couple of quarters ago, it's now come down to even less than that, the impact of the withdrawal symptom of not doing that high yield book is also coming in the form of income lines. So that is the reason why they expect 26, the income line to get affected. But the good news is that OPEX, like I said, we expect to be low because I told you a lot of initiatives are going on. And therefore, by Q3, Q4 of next year, I mean, you know, you should see a reasonably sharp upward movement of operating, you know, profit, let me say. And for those of you, you know, who are going to be with us until that time and see how the worm is turning, you will be able to see how the margins are expanding. And frankly, like I said before in my opening comment, that once that MFI will then probably by the time be probably even 4% of the book or something like that. So it won't be much, and it would also have been the spring cleaning of the MFI book would have happened by that time. Our book would be insured largely by that time. So we expect that from there on, MFI shouldn't give us trouble. And then the rest of the book is anyway doing well. So we expect that, like I said before, after that, the rest of the story is will keep moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, just to add, this is our current estimation. Of course, this factors in that the stress in the MFI portfolio continues for a few quarters. If things sort of ease out, maybe, and some growth sort of comes in here, then we could see some uplift in these numbers. But these are our current estimates that income could grow by about 14.5 to 15%.
Guys, sorry, just to double check, you were saying that the OPEX, the material drop of OPEX growth, we should be much more visible in the second half of 26, right? Is that did I get it right?
You will see it every quarter. You can see it in even already this quarter itself. If you see Q1 to Q1 of this year, Q2 to Q2 of this year, Q3 to Q3 of this year. For example, our OPEX growth in Q1 25 was 21.1% YOY. In Q2 to 17.7%. In Q3 is 16.1%. So our OPEX is stabilizing and definitely coming down. You know, I'm first of all happy that you're asking this question because many people do believe that, listen, this bank is spending, and this OPEX never seems to come under control. What's going on? Well, you see the numbers. It's dropping quarter by quarter, at least in a percentage, YOY sense. And we are confident of next year because we believe that the bulk of the, you know, investments have been done. Of course, investments are never completely done in life, but at least, like I said before, whatever we had to launch, we launched. So we're not going to set up with a new business launch tomorrow morning and say, oh, my God, losing money. That's not coming. That trouble is not coming your way.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Mundra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, evening, sir. And thanks for additional disclosures on slippages, MFI, and lot many things. So first question is on MFI only. So outstanding book is around 10,900 crores. That is the MFI book. But I wanted to check, is there any other loans that we offer to this customer? Maybe two-wheeler, maybe small auto loan or any other PL loan? Or, you know, these customers get only MFI loans from us?
No, we don't sell very many other products along with it. It's a regular MFI. The short answer.
Right, sir. So that, okay. So sure. Second question is, sir, I mean, just to get this correct, you have mentioned that you have a conservative provisioning policy and you have not utilized any contingent, right? So as against the SMA 1 plus 2 outstanding of roughly around 500 odd crores, we as of now, we still have 300 and, you know, few crores provisioning that we had at the end of the Q2, right? That is the right understanding.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, if you sum up the NPA book on MFI and the SMA 1 and 2 book, the cumulative provision which is held is about 70%.
Oh, okay, great. thirdly, on this, sir, collection on MFI book again, so collection efficiency, you mentioned that it has come up to 98.6%. But what we can also recall is there is likely to be tighter guardrails which will be coming in effect from April 1st, which would, you know, create further disturbance, at least for the people who have slightly higher share of lenders. If you can comment, you know, are you factoring into that development while saying that the MFI should be peaking in fourth quarter?
No, when we say MFI should be peaking in fourth quarter, basically we have estimated the collection percentage that is coming currently. And, you know, assumed a little more improvement because the trend line is in that direction, slightly assumed. And then we know the flow in the portfolio. So our estimates are that Q4 on this basis should be the peak. The other thing is that in terms of the, to your question about the changes in the industry, about the, you know, the norms with which others are going to work with, they're going to work with, et cetera. We are going to follow all the norms of the industry. And we have a little more controls over and above that at our own end. So basically once you follow all the norms of the industry, number of lenders, amount of exposure, et cetera, we will probably be in line with the industry, let me say.
Right. And then lastly, if you can elaborate your assessment of the current situation in the state of Karnataka and what is the portfolio that we have in the state of Karnataka?
You want to find out, sir?
Yeah, we'll just...
When you move to the next question, other than we get it, we'll...
61.
Karnataka.
9%.
9% Karnataka.
Yeah, so we have about 9% in Karnataka. That's the number.
Okay, sure. And lastly, sir, your consumer loan growth, right? So consumer loan growth, it has been coming down as with every other bank also. But if I look at now, it has come down to 10% YOY. Is this more or less stabilizing here, or you think it can, you know, more or less continue to see a bit of a moderation because of the ongoing cautiousness at the system level?
See, frankly, for us to grow any of these businesses is not difficult at all because, like we always say, we are coming on a low base as compared to, let me say, industry leaders who have a very large share of the market. We are like nothing or nobody. So we're not so concerned about market share. We're not even talking that language within the organization or outside. But more specifically on consumer loans, we feel that they're all growing well. There's no issue.
Right, sir. And then last question from my end, sir. We now estimate that, you know, cost to income should be ideally 65 by FY27.
Sorry to interrupt, Jay, but your line seems to be unclear right now. Could you please repeat the question?
Sir, I was talking about cost-to-income trajectory that you have given that by FY27 we should be hitting 65% mark. Assuming we do that, what kind of an ROA would you expect on 65% cost-to-income? Thank you.
See, the... you know, we've got different analysts have different estimates on this front. The way, if you don't mind, can I just take you a little a larger question about the breakup of our various lines of businesses and their economics. See, if you move to page 65 of the presentation, we have shown the operating profit as a percentage of loan book of the lending business. We have broken our bank into three parts. One is the entire lending business, retail, MSME, rural, corporate, all put together is one family. Now, on that front, we are having 4.3% of the loan book as our operating profit. This includes MFI, by the way. So, if you before the MFI crisis struck, it was 4.7%. We actually expected to go to 4.8 or 4.9 because of operating leverage. But, of course, it's come down to 4.3. But still, 4.3 is 4.3. There's nothing bad about it. It's pretty good, actually. Now, and we believe this should go up. Because end of the day, even in, as our loan book grows from 2.2 lakh crore, which is today, to say 5 lakh crore in, you know, in the next 4-5 years, this has to go up. Obviously, we're not going to keep on spending more and more money in the same proportion of the loan book growth. So this will come. So think of this number a little higher than this. Now, the second thing is like you take the second business I told you, you know, the liability business, which I said that you must expect us to take it to zero, which is cost income to come down to 100, which means that the credit, the loss will become zero. So let us assume for a minute that does head to zero. And let us assume for a minute that the credit card business, after all, we are not doing this for a social work or a research work. We're actually going to, it's a profitable business. We want to make money on it. So that business is, you know, already touched 100% cost income ratio. And we believe it will touch the 60s odd in the next 4-5 years. So that should be making like 500 odd crores of PAT by that time. Today it's making loss of 300 crores last year, probably about 180, 200 crores this year. And next year break even for sure. And then from next year after that, you know, I have to bite my tongue and see for sure, because sometimes, you know, it may not play, but we are expecting, highly confident that next year credit cards should move, you know, should be positive. So, and by the time, like I said, 24, 29, 30, it should be making like 500, 600 crores of PAT. So therefore, if you take this 4.3%, which is today, and get some operating leverage on it, take it to maybe 4.7, 4.8 by that time, probably more, and then you assume both liabilities that are become positive at least, if you know, then you see what happens. On this 4.3, you take some credit cost of maybe 1.1 off, or 4.5, you take 1.1 off, because we're comparing everything of assets. And then you subtract 1.1, assuming credit cost is at current levels, like what we are, you know, ex MFI. So you take that off. So 4.4 minus 1.1 are looking like about 4.3, we should take the percentage of loans. Let me correct myself. So this, let me say this 4.6 or 7, you subtract from that about 1.7% as the credit cost by that time. So you'll be looking like about 3-ish or so. And then you have tax on it, or maybe 2.9, and then you take tax on it of maybe 60, 70 basis points. This bank is surely headed to the 2% plus, you know, ROA basis, or 2% plus for sure. So, and it will be a 2% plus ROA bank, it will be a growing bank, it will have a unique technologies, it will have, you know, a growth, it will have its own modes, and you know, culture is very good, a customer friendly approach. So we will tick all the boxes. Today we tick 5 boxes, but we don't tick one box, which is the cost income ratio. But we're conscious of it, we'll fix it. So that's the only way to think about this bank in the longest run. I have zero doubt in my head the bank is heading in that direction. Now you may have 1 year plus minus whatever, but I'm pretty sure the bank is heading in that direction.
Right, sir. So your assessment of the current situation in Karnataka for MFI, you know, there are quite a few developments, state government trying to sort of intervene. If you can update as to what is happening on the latest front.
Yeah, before I come to the question, let me just give one finishing touch to the previous question, because, you know, I answered that detail. So think about it like I was saying earlier, that this 4.5 odd and you take 1.7 odd for credit cost. So you're left with 2.8-ish or so. And then also remember that's all percentage of loans. You got to convert to percentage of assets. That will come down to something like 2.4 or so. And then you take the tax off, comes down to 2. I'm sorry, I just wanted to do this. Make the distinction between percentage of loans and percentage of assets so that you can get the math right. So in this match, if you read the match, went to a spreadsheet, you will get to see a 2% ROA-ish bank. And the only catch here can be credit cost. There's no other catch here. Now, in the credit cost fund, well, it's like it's a long period of 14, 15 years of running a good credit cost company, except this MFI mishap that has happened now. If you believe that we should be able to run the credit cost on, this, on the lines we're talking about, 1.7-ish percentage of loans, which will probably be 1.2-ish of percentage of assets. So, sorry, that's a previous question. Now, back to your question again.
Yeah, and with respect to Karnataka, again, this is a very latest development. This has come in the last 3 days. So we will closely watch the situation. It's difficult to sort of give out what could be the impact on that front, but we are quite watchful anyway on the overall MFI portfolio.
Thank you, sir. All the very best, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question and thank you very much for all the enhanced disclosures. Just firstly on MFI, the three-member rule that's coming up next quarter, have we proactively moved to that?
No, we are currently following what is allowed in the system. I told you there are two reasons we like the business also. It makes the money and it's insured. So we are happy the way we're doing it right now. We are just following the rules of the broader ecosystem.
But don't you think it makes sense to tighten right now when it's eventually going to come a quarter later? I mean, if you're going to be the fourth lender today and it's not going to be allowed, say, April 1st onwards, and the next lender is not able to, let's call it evergreen that borrower, she will default to you, right?
No, that's true. But we are very carefully, very, very carefully watching this. So basically what we have done is we put some extra controls in our MFI business over and above the normal market rules. It's just we're not restricting ourselves to the ecosystem rules that have come that the four lenders or three lenders. That's not our only condition. We have developed actually a very active scorecard where we have introduced a lot more number of parameters, which we believe will give us a much more scientific decision-making process than blunt rules.
Got it. And do you also track the entire household debt?
As part of the appraisal process, certainly our people ask the question, we understand the household debt and they're supposed to meet certain requirement of, as a percentage of the household debt is what is supposed to lend, etc. We follow all of that.
Thank you.
You get the best estimate, from the situation. We go by our best estimates of what our people assess on the occasion, actually. But, you can understand only that much of these households anyway.
Thank you. The current participant seems to have dropped from the queue. We have the next question from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So coming back to the slides 65, 66, 67, I just want to understand a couple of assumptions here. One was the OPEX, which is linked to the technology part or the head office and other things, which are not allocable to a certain business. They are not captured. I just want to get that right. And second was on the fee income piece. Is it getting captured in, if it's a wholesale business fee, is it getting captured anywhere? And if not, is that missing in this analysis or is it getting captured somewhere? And third was on the liability business, the ratio that we're showing. Are we building in any transfer pricing income in the interest income for the liability business?
So Rohan, let's take one question. Let's take one question at a time, no boss. It will become easier for us. Let's take the first one. So, can't you take that?
Yeah, so maybe I'll first tell you how this has been constructed. So essentially, if you take the P&L of the asset book, if you take which includes retail as well as wholesale, so these numbers captures both the businesses. Then we have a liability business. Then we have put out a credit card business separately, right? Then we have a small income and OPEX which comes to the toll business. Essentially, these are the broad lines of business. If you sum all of it, then it becomes the bank's number, right? In terms of how are we assessing this, so this is based on an internal transfer pricing and a cost allocation methodology which we have put in place. So to your question on IT cost, even a portion, all of it is allocated in any one of these businesses, right? So it's on a fully allocation basis, how these numbers have been drawn out when we are computing the pre-provisioning operating profit for all of these businesses. So on your question on liability, in terms of how this number has been computed, let me just quickly dwell on that. So there is an NII which the liability unit earns on the deposit which it mobilizes, right? So they could mobilize current account, they could mobilize savings account, they could mobilize term deposits, right? We all know current account is the best form of money to have, right? Because it comes with 0% cost. So we give an internal transfer pricing income to the retail liability unit. Similarly, on savings, we give some transfer pricing income. And so is the case with TD, which is more a commodity product. The rate will be much lesser there, right? So that would be the NII income from the retail liability group. Then there are fees which can be directly identified and attributable to the retail business. This could be fees you are earning by not maintaining average monthly balance or a quarterly balance by the customer. Could be ATM link fees, could be fees on account of insurance, forex, distribution of mutual funds, and so on. So that would be the second pool of income for the liability branch. They could also sell assets or say sell a home loan, a personal loan, loan against property. We give a certain internal transfer pricing fee to the liability unit. Okay. So NII and PEP fees, all of these components makes it the total income. In terms of a cost, there are costs which are directly attributable to the branch, which could be the people cost, the housekeeping, salary, the DICGC premium, ATM running cost, and so on. And second, as I said, is it's also loaded for the allocations, right, which could be for IT, which could be for operations, which could be for customer service, which could be for the corporate center teams. So it's on a fully loaded basis. That's how the finally the P&L is arrived for each of the businesses, right? And like for an asset specific, you will load it with the sourcing cost. You will load it with the collection cost. So some of these items change according to the nature of the businesses.
So, sir, I was trying to reconcile this number. So, see, if you look at FY24, the asset income is coming at 4.7%, and this is on total advances, so roughly two-thirds of the total balance sheet. If you look at the retail liabilities, the cost is 1.7, which is, again, roughly two-thirds of the balance sheet. So, if you adjust this, 3% is the net that we make. If I add the interest on investments, that is roughly 1.4%, so we get to around 4.4%. At a PPOP level, and if you take two-thirds of it, it comes to around 3% odd. Whereas the computed ROAs for the bank was coming at around 2.4%. So roughly 50 basis point gap was coming in, so that's where I was trying to understand what could be explaining the difference vis-a-vis the analysis that you shared.
We also have the credit card business, which also generates an NII and fees, right? So,
but that was a small amount on the total loan book, so that's fair.
Yeah, then on the investment income, as you said, you have taken a certain component. I'm saying
we have
treasury investments, we have a few other investments. So let me assure you, all of this adds up to the bank numbers, right? And these numbers are in that way very sacrosanct.
And they're also shared with the board. And I mean, in the sense that whatever we're sharing with you, they've all gone past the board already.
Maybe this reconciliation, we can take it offline and
we'll
give you more details around this.
Sure, sir. And secondly, sir, this is on the deposit piece. See, if you look at it, you have been delivering healthy growth on deposits. So just want to understand in terms of the contribution, if we are the journey wherein an asset customer is coming to us first and we are converting them into liability subsequently, how would that journey play out and what could be the contribution in terms of incremental growth? And overall, how is the mix of new to bank customers on deposits vis-a-vis the organic growth on deposits? Some color around that.
So currently, as we are a new to bank, in the sense that if you think of any bank as being around for 20, 30, 50, 100 years, they'll have a large customer base. And even if they gave one interest credit of 5%, all of them, the balances goes up by that alone, you know, and then they got to get a little less of the external market, so to say, because they're flying on two wings. A bank like us, which is starting up right now, since we start with zero base, today we're no longer zero base, we're still 2 lakhs, but in the context of what we want to build in life, maybe 10, 15, 20 lakh crores over the next many years, we're still zero base. So a large part of a business is still very heavily NTB, and a good thing is that we built really good journeys to make it smooth for customers to bring money to us. So that's how you think about it. So we are, right now we're still a zero-day company and a zero-based company, and we still have a good percentage that is coming from new customers.
Sure. Anything on the asset-linked originations?
Sorry, what's that?
That you can share. Any mix that you can share on how much deposits may be coming from the asset customers
you were originating
first?
I guess the assets are useful, but see, frankly, all asset customers are not really good liability customers. So the in the sense that we are not finding customers with consumer durables or two-wheelers, etc., bringing any meaningful liabilities at all. They are really relatively, you know, they're relatively more modest income, and therefore they're borrowing to buy a two-wheeler, so it's unlikely that they'll have much money with them. So I mean, they may keep 5, 8, 10,000 rupees, so that's not big balances. But the customers who avail, say, a home loan, for example, or customers who are availing, you know, these kind of products, or even loan against property for that matter, these are the people who have money. And the credit card customers who are usually coming in, they have more money. Because they're the credit selected people. So what I'm trying to say is that the high affluence customers is what to bring the money. So not all asset customers on our bank are high affluence.
Got it. And lastly, on
but we do people who open home loans, etc. We do open their savings account to a very, very high degree, actually.
And sorry, before you put up the next question, just on the previous question, the number question which you asked, right? See, as you said, 4.4% is the PPOP on assets, right? And 1.7 is the negative on liability, which makes it 2.7. And the asset book, advances book is of roughly 70% of the asset balance sheet, right? And on the rest, 30% essentially investments or incomes coming from toll, right? If you apply these proportions, you will get a number of about 2.3% on PPOP, which is the disclosed number for us for the 9 months, right? So PPOP to total asset is about 2.29%, and this is the broad reconciliation.
So this is very useful. In fact,
so you added that interest income from investment also addition to this?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If we include that, then it matches. If we include that... Yeah. Okay, I'll just take it offline and then just reconcile that. Okay.
And also to the previous questions I was answering, on the how the economics of the longer run will play out, this Sudhanshu's question answers it very well, because this 4.4-ish we've shown there, which we believe will move towards the 4.7-ish or so comfortably, and you take off the 1.7 from that, you come down to the 3-ish, and then that maths, when you do that way also, you'll come back to the same answer, because we'll come net of your credit cost, will come down like to the 3-ish, and then because of the fact that we are now going to compute as percentage of assets, not loans, that 3 will start looking towards like a 2.4-ish or so, and then you subtract the tax from it to come back to 2. So we feel that any which way you look at it, this bank is filling the heading there. Whether you can reach there in 2030 or 31 or 32, I mean, it will be very hard to really pick a number. But this bank, we have zero doubt in my mind that, this 1.7, 1.8 kind of ROA, this is not a difficult thing for a bank with our economics. The real issue is that our true economics, which is a true incremental profitability of this bank, is getting clouded by the fact that all of you are looking at the whole thing, and you're not factoring for the fact that the liability loses money, or credit card loses money, or, by the way, there are many products which are not called out to you because it will become too complicated. There are many other business bankers launched, like I told you, like we've launched so many. They're all in negative zone, but we have no interest in running business in negative zones forever. They're just meant to become profitable. It's just a matter of time. So every product is going to its own J curve of loss to profit, and when they all come up together, it will become a, it'll all come together.
Sure, sir. And then lastly, just on this composition of operating expenses slide, the volume linked expenses and channel sourcing expenses, if you could help us understand what would be the contribution from the asset side and the liability side, if there's anything that you can share there.
Yeah, so sourcing linked expenses, channel sourcing expenses would be essentially from the asset side, right? Because this is cost for your DSAs, DSTs, business correspondence, and so on. The volume linked, it largely, I would say, it could be across, right? Because you could have for credit cards, the reward point expense which comes in, you could have the cash backs and propositions which go along with the credit card. On the liability side, it could be the DICG's premium, it could be IMPS, RTGS, NEFT, and so on. right? On the asset side, it could be the collection link cost, it could be even like a bureau cost and all which you incur at origination. So it's across all of these verticals, I would say.
Sure. Thanks. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we request you to please keep your questions brief. We have the next question from the line of Pritesh Bump from DAM Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, team. Good evening, sir. Sir, just wanted to check on two-wheeler. In our slide also, we've shown that the industry is seeing some uptick in terms of 30-plus DPD and asset quality issues. What is our sense? We have that as a large book, and it's a high yielding, high credit cost business as well. So what do you see there?
So now it's behaving quite stably, but you know, in this business, we all learn never to be too sure. So we'll be very, very watchful. But we built the business, we have some, you know, we built this business over the last maybe 10, 15 years, actually more 15 years than 10, 15 years probably. And we've seen lots of cycles. So now it's doing very well for us.
Yeah, sorry, on the two-wheeler question, just adding few inputs here. So two-wheeler is the bulk of the book in the vehicles segment. That's roughly at about 70% of the vehicles book. If you see that the presentation, we have also given SMA1, SMA2 numbers and NPA, right, at the vehicles level. So it has been holding up quite well. Two-wheeler has been growing quite nicely for us. We have a formidable market share here. We have been again invested in this business for quite long, right? So while we are quite watchful because of the economic environment, but we feel comfortable at this stage broadly in terms of the sourcing and the portfolio sort of which is sort of moving on this front. Hello?
So the current participant seems to have dropped from the queue. We will proceed to the next questioner, which is Ms. Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I probably got dropped off from the line earlier. So just on MFI, how much money can we expect back from CGFMU right now? Is it fair to say that since half the loans are insured, and assuming the same slippage ratio between the insured and the non-insured book, this should be the amount we get back?
Yeah, so essentially, today also when we have an NPA pool which has got piled up, this has some proportion which is out of the CGFMU portfolio and there is some portion which is out of the old sourcing, right? So particularly on the CGFMU insured book, right, we would start getting claims starting from FY27, right? And the recoup of credit losses could be as high as about 70%, right, of the losses which we incur on the CGFMU-linked NPA.
Oh, it's only up to 70%?
Yeah, it's up to 70%.
So, like, 30% is sort of copay, is it? Is that how I have to think about it?
30% is what?
So let's take it, let's skip 2 years ahead just for simplicity's sake, so that let us assume 100% is insured.
Okay.
And let us say that 2028 you wake up and you find that credit cost in microfinance is 4%. So your credit cost that hit the books will probably be, 30% or 28% to be more precise, 28% of that. If it's 3%, it'll be probably be 1% will come to us and 2% will go to CGFMU. It's like that.
Yeah, but the policy which we have, we end up providing earlier, right? While the money generally comes within 2 years after the date of disbursement. Hence, I said for the disbursements which we started from January 24, we expect the tranche to sort of come in from FY27. So we would have provided to a great extent on these NPAs. So we could expect a recoup in credit costs in that year.
Got it. Fair enough. And just lastly, how are things on the credit cards front? I see that your NPA is stable, SMA 1 and 2 has improved quite a bit. Your comments on this would be useful.
Our credit cards are doing well. You could see our numbers. Our SMA 1 and 2 in credit cards has come down last quarter. It's come down from 1.69% to 1.32%. In fact, last 3 quarters come down to 1.88, 1.69, 1.32. So even on the NPA number,
The NPA has come up to 1.91% vis-à-vis 1.95% in the previous quarter. I had mentioned in the call last time that on credit card, we feel quite comfortable because of various timely policy interventions which we had done. Credit cost in credit card on the book is marginally lower than the previous quarter. And we have the view that this trajectory could continue.
Okay.
Reason to get very disturbed and think of that. We have one problem, and that's a known problem, MFI. It's not the credit cards.
Understood. Okay, no, because for the industry, it's been an issue, and since you all have now started disclosing SMA 1-2 data, it was quite useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, okay. That's it from my end. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anurag Mantri from Oxbow Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just one question on the credit cost ex-MFI. So essentially, if I do the math for this quarter and for the last couple of quarters, it seems that the normal book ex-MFI and ex-infra account that you had last quarter, the credit cost is coming more like 1.7, 1.8, 1.9, like the trajectory for the last three quarters as such. So just wanted to understand how you're looking at it because there has been a margin increase every quarter in that as well. Do you see the current level as more stable? Do you see maybe potentially some bit more increase? And if you can point to any reasons why this increase has happened in the last couple of quarters, that'd be useful. Thanks.
Yeah, so on this front, the credit cost ex-MFI and the toll account, if you also keep it aside, for Q1, the credit cost was about 1.7%. In Q2, it was 1.8%, and Q3 has also come in with 1.8%. We feel that this could broadly remain in this range, maybe could be or maybe 180 to 190, that kind of range. So we per se don't foresee this to materially go up, or it could marginally sort of inch here and there, right? So we feel quite comfortable on the rest of this book.
In fact, people often ask us because it's a fair concern, because if you're an investor, you should worry all the time, so you should. Many people do ask, not just us, I've seen some television interviews on these business channels, etc., saying that is the issue on MFI going to spill over to consumer credit, and people do half an hour discussions on these things. Really, we are not seeing any spillover or anything like that. This is just a very rural, this MFI is a very rural kind of stuff. Within urban, so we've seen no impact at all. There's no reason for any impact. So what is the question of spillover? Now we're talking of rural. It's the microfinance is a very unique business as compared to any other business. What is unique about microfinance? Microfinance is when the group of borrowers are coming together and repaying, when our people have to go to the customers, to a common venue, and customers to come and pay, meaning we have no right to debit the customer's bank accounts for an EMI. Every other product we sell, we have a right to debit the customer's bank account, and we have to only deal with the returns that come. In MFI, the nature of business is different. We give the money on the due date. We go and sit in the college or the school or somewhere, and at a joint, and customer has to pay. So MFI is a unique thing. So it's a unique thing, behaving differently. It has its odd behavior sometimes, but it's only very, very MFI-focused thing for us. Rest of the book, we said that before, I'm saying it again, is behaving well. I mean, in the sense the entire corporate book is behaving well, entire retail book is behaving well, entire MSME book is behaving well, business banking is behaving well, credit card is behaving well. They're all behaving well. And you see the numbers. And let me just tell you one very, very important thing, which towards the closing, I'll share with you. We are giving you not just NPA or credit cost. These are standard. Of course, everybody should give it, and that's part of the job. We have in our investor presentation and even otherwise, we are explaining our basis of lending. We are giving an EMI check bounce, EMI bounces. We are giving collection percentage efficiency on those bounces. Then next step, we're giving SMA data. Then we give SMA data by product. Then we give NPA data. NPA data, we give by product. Then we give NPA data by product and by the four quarters at a stretch. Then we give vintage analysis. Then we give industry comparison, 30 DPD of our bank versus other industry. So the amount of detail we give is something. I mean, we're giving the full funnel to you. So it should not be difficult to estimate any number, and all our numbers reconcile. So it should not be difficult for you to realize that this is only a microfinance problem. Others are behaving well. All the numbers are there. In fact, if you went to page 30 to maybe 45, you'll find all the information.
And just to add, even into the next year, so as Vaidya said, that on MFI, we expect the peak to sort of come in Q4, and that should, the credit cost should keep coming down into the next year every quarter. And for the rest of the book, we feel the provisions could be very range bound or more or less around this current levels, right? So which means that the overall credit cost is expected to come down for the next year vis-a-vis the pain, with some of the pain on the MFI, which we saw into this year.
So only as a caveat, just to be safe, because we are, you know, we're speaking and a lot of people listening to us, etc. Now, we have seen this, like I said, for a long time. I'm talking ex-MFI. I told you, we've given every part of the chain and funnel we've given to you. Publicly, it's there in the presentation. Now, we have seen that every business have their own nature. They have their own credit cost behavior. If you do some product of all of that, you'll get a reasonable estimate of our bank credit cost, which is the 1.8 we're talking about. Well, you know, we are human. We're running a business. So the 1.8 can become 1.9. May can become 2, who knows, maybe can become 1.6 also, but it's going to be range bound, it's going to be here, it's not like, I'm not saying by the way it will become 2 tomorrow morning or something, but I'm just telling you that it is the range, it is never going to become, it's never gone completely off whack, because there is a certain credit criteria we lend to. We don't fiddle with our credit criteria, we have lent and we learnt and we refine and we refine. So as long as you don't get greedy and you don't want big business and we don't want to get aggressive, etc., which you don't want to, it will behave a particular way, and it is behaving a particular way. It will behave a particular way because it has a particular, cadence to it.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it's quite a while though. Anything else?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Dama from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is on your OPEX. You said that 18-19% of OPEX will go down to 13%. Any 3 to 4 key drivers that you see where basically you will see this kind of a cost reduction going forward?
Sorry to interrupt, Anand, but your line is not very clear.
Is it better now?
Yes, this is better. Please, request you to please ask your question again.
Sure. So basically, you said that your OPEX, which is about 18-19% growth.
We heard you.
Yeah, so essentially, the overall arching theme is that we expect the operating leverage to play out, right, clearly as we move along into the next year. If you see, we have given some level of details, like if you see employee costs, right, that was going at a much higher pace, and that pace has considerably come off. So even into the next year, we expect that employee cost percentage increase could come down, right? It's a combination of the number of employees which we foresee could sort of come in terms of addition for the expansion which we are planning and so on, right? So we expect that the employee cost to taper down. Even on the non-employee cost, right, I think there, as I said, there's some fixed component and there is some variable component, right? So there also the fixed cost will grow in a particular trajectory. And the volume is something which will go, which is linked to the volume, right? Some of the examples which I could sort of give here, like we have said that for, as we may grow the deposits at 25%, the branch may not come in that tandem, right? We may add about 75 to 100 branches into next year, which is 10% over the current stock. So clearly some leverage sort of comes in there, right? Your tech cost and so on, we have already done a lot of front loading in last few years, right? So that could increase at a particular pace. So we feel that because a lot of expenses have sort of already come in, there is clearly an operating leverage or the proportion increase could definitely come down from the current levels.
And would that also mean that next year our growth could be sub 20% and that also to some extent will contribute towards this kind of a lower OPEX?
No, we are not planning to slow down the growth. I mean, like 20-ish of the loan and about 22, 23, 24 of the deposits. Because frankly, as you've seen for the last many years, we are good at deposits. If we wanted, we could grow 25, 27, whatever we want. but the need may come down next quarter, next year. So therefore, about 24-ish?
We may require only 23-24% kind of a growth on deposit next year for fueling a 20% growth on the asset side.
So our deposits are growing well already, so we don't need very many branches. The short answer is, to Sudhanshu, if I were to sum it up for you, on the loan side, on the deposit side, because deposit is one part of our expense, as you know, on that front, we are not planning to load very many branches because current branch architecture of about 1,000-odd is good enough to give us roughly the numbers we want. Of course, we think a little ahead. I don't want to be caught on the wrong foot for 27 or 28 or 29. So just as insurance, we'll still go and put about 100-odd. But we are comfortable. And of course, we may tinker with the size of the branches, we may reduce the size and put a little more, or we may increase the size and put a little less, whatever. But, you know, you get the drift that this is the order of magnitude we're planning to grow. So let's call it 100. So if a current base is 1,000, you go 100, you're going to add only 10% branches. But we're expecting book to grow by 20% plus. So that is operating leverage.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as our last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vaidyanathan for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
I want to just thank all of you. I think you've had a long time with us today, and we thank you for being with us for this long. And we do request you to think a little ahead. We've given you quite a few, you know, new things. I think for 4 years were known issues. Suddenly we come with the MFI issue. We're also feeling a little disturbed by that as to why we are surprising like this. And we are a bit unhappy with ourselves that after settling everything right, suddenly this MFI has come at us and we are having to have this conversation. But we believe after this, we see the back of MFI, we are not seeing any major crisis other than that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you everyone. Just to add to Vaidya, so I'm saying while we are seeing some top line pressures which could come in, but clearly we are working towards improving the operating leverage, and that's why the OPEX growth could moderate and so on. I also touched upon that provisions could be lower on an overall basis. So we are very much sort of working on improving the set of numbers. Thanks, and thank you for a patient hearing, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
And really, from all of us at IDFC First Bank, if any of our employees are hearing this call, I wanted to just take the opportunity to say that we're building an amazing bank. Have confidence in yourself. You know, in a long journey, these, you know, and odd things can happen in a quarter, 2 quarters, 3 quarters, but have confidence in building something amazing. Yeah, thank you, everybody. And if any employees are hearing, that's for you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. That concludes this conference, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.